Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
Thank you very much, Madison Rogers. Also kicking off right now is tonight's edition of Nightside. My name, as you mentioned, is Dan Ray, the host of Nightside. And we will take on both the Patriots and the Bills tonight, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't matter. If you're a football fan, you're probably watching the game. If you're not, we'll keep you posted on the scores of the game. This is one that we really are not going to ignore. Sometimes I like to ignore these games. But this was one that I'll keep my eye on for you, and I'll let you know. You'll know as soon as anyone else was watching the game. That's as simple as that. And Rob will keep his eye. Rob, the producer of this program. We have a great show scheduled for you tonight. I think it's going to be much more entertaining than the football game, but we'll deal with that in a moment. We're going to be speaking in just a moment with a guest on this show before, Dr. Harvey Risch, professor of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health. He's also involved with the Yale School of Medicine's Department of Epidemiology and Public Health. And we'll get to Dr. Risch in a moment. We're going to talk at some point later on tonight about that horrific case out in Michigan, where now not only is the 15-year-old shooter who took the life of lives of four fellow students, but also his parents are under arrest. We're going to talk about that case. And also, Chris Cuomo, otherwise known as Fredo, has resigned, not only from CNN. Well, he was fired from CNN, but he's also resigned now from Sirius Radio, or Sirius XM Radio. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. Over the weekend, I'm sure all of you watched as breathtaking reports flashed across the news screens of yet another Omicron case in this state or that state. And to me, it looks like this is getting a little overplayed right now. And with us is Dr. Harvey Risch. He is a professor of epidemiology, as I mentioned, at the Yale School of Public Health and also at the Yale School of Medicine's Department of Epidemiology and Public Health. Professor Risch, welcome back to Nightside. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Good to be talking with you again.
Well, it's always great to have you on the program. And I'm looking at this now from the perspective of 20 months, and I see all sorts of concerns over the last 20 months in terms of how the government has messaged this and how they have mishandled the messaging of the COVID-19 pandemic. But I'd like to start by focusing on everything that I read and that I hear about what's going on with the latest variant, the Omicron. Omicron, I should say. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it correctly. But it sounds as if the cases are mild. From what I understand, no one has even been hospitalized from this. And yet, I think we're treating it like it's another huge wave. Am I missing something here, Dr. Risch?
No, I think you've got the picture pretty clear. I think that the issue of underlying messaging always has to be promoted by the people, you know, who are doing that promotion, and therefore they take any opportunity to use any public information that, you know, supports their message to push it in that direction. And so that's why I think there's so much hype, fear, locking down African countries. They've even locked down African countries where there haven't been any tested positive Omicron patients yet at all. And they're locked down, too, from travel to the U.S. and from other countries. I think that there's been a lot of excessive fear and anxiety raised over this, unnecessary. And I think, honestly, we're all fear porn fatigued at this point. You know, I think we're just tired of all this fear mongering.
Yeah, I just on this day in New York, the mayor of New York apparently is signing an executive order of some sort, which is going to require every employee, whether or not they are the employee of a government agency or a business with more than 100 people, while the OSHA requirements of 100 people and now it looks as if they may die a very quiet death or maybe a very loud death in federal court, it seems like people in power are just looking to exercise levers of power just for the purpose of exercising the lever of power. There's no suggestion that there is a benefit from the exercise of the levers of power. Again, am I reading it right or am I missing something?
Well, I think it's theater. I think de Blasio is planning on running for governor and he wants to pander to people he thinks are going to vote for him because mm-hmm. of his theatrical actions that he knows cannot be enforced and you know, are unconstitutional.
To me, I've watched it, and I know that in retrospect, there's plenty of mixed messages that were wrong. I can remember all of us, we had to wipe down our kitchen counter, you know, five times an hour. We couldn't bring groceries into the home unless they stood outside for a couple of hours and then get wiped down. We were told not to wear masks, then wear masks. And of course, as recently as the 4th of July, we had the current president and the current vice president saying they would not accept vaccines from the previous president. I mean, it has kind of been like a comedy of errors, a Keystone Cop routine. On the 4th of July, President Biden said we all could eat a hot dog in our backyard. That's how confident he was that this has been under control. How could they mess this up? They couldn't have messed it up any better, in my opinion.
Well, at the beginning, you don't really know the truth of some of these things. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when you get more information about are people getting contaminated enough by touch as opposed to by breathing, you know, then you might want to take some precautions. But that information gets crystallized pretty well over time. And so by 6 months in, we knew, you know, that the major route was airborne, and that airborne could come from people and from sprays in bathrooms and, you know, and in household circumstances. So, and that was kind of largely it. Public gatherings in some cases, indoors, without good airflow. And so we knew how this was getting transmitted. But it took a while to crystallize that information. So I'm willing to give some benefit of the doubt at that stage of things. Today, 2 years later, you know, I'm not willing to give the benefit of the doubt to nonsense that we know is nonsense. The masking issue is nonsense. And other things that are just not rational, that what we've had is a pandemic of plausibility, that the American public and maybe the whole world has been fooled into thinking that things that are plausible must be scientific when they're being proclaimed as being scientific. If you take something that's plausible and proclaim that it's scientific, people will believe it. And so that's what this whole pandemic has been about, is taking things that are plausible, like, oh, Omicron's another virus, another variant of the virus, and it might be dangerous, so we have to do everything we can to lock down and prevent it from getting here, and so on. It sounds plausible, and therefore it's claimed to be science, but it's not true. It's not science. So plausibility and science are not the same thing by any means.
Well, you are a scientist. You have been a scientist for how many years now, if I could ask?
40 plus.
40 plus. And how many years you've been associated with Yale?
Over 30.
And you have been taken a lot of criticism from some who do not have anywhere near the bona fides that you have. I'd like to talk about that because you have stepped out there, I think, pretty courageously and made some of these comments. Can I hold you for a little while and invite
sure.
some callers to join the conversation? Would that be possible?
Sure.
Okay. My guest, Dr. Harvey Risch, professor of epidemiology at the Yale School of Medicine, the Yale School of Public Health. He is a... really an island of sanity, as far as I'm concerned, in a conversation that has taken us and pulled and tugged us in so many different ways. We will take a very quick break. If you'd like to ask Dr. Risch a question, comment on what he's been saying, we'll give you that opportunity at 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030, and the ladies' line is 617-931-1030. If you'd like to speak with a real scientist, someone who has practiced science for a long time in the again in the atmosphere of the Ivy League, and someone who has taken a position that has caused him a lot of unfair criticism. Feel free to join the conversation. Be right back here on Nightside with my guest, Dr. Harvey Risch.
You're on Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
My guest is Dr. Harvey Risch. He's a professor of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health, the Yale School of Medicine. He's been there for quite a time. You've been criticized by a lot of people. You have suggested that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine could have been used particularly early in conjunction with other drugs and actually might have saved lives. You believe that. I know there are a lot of others in the profession, and I've had many of them on this program who feel that way. And yet the mainstream media has literally made fun of people who have expressed alternative remedies, if you will. How frustrating has that been, knowing that the people who are criticizing your comments have no idea what they're talking about?
Well, to be honest, I just don't take them seriously. I'm a scientist, and my job is to see what nature is saying in it and translate that into English. And so that's what I do, and I'm not going to lie and say nature says something other than what it says. Now, if people don't want to believe it, that's their issues. When they prevent patients who need the medications from getting those medications that work, that's a much more a worse ethical issue that needs to be dealt with. But as far as I'm concerned, my job is just to be as objective as I can. And, you know, one of the things about working in a university like Yale that values its academic freedom is that I've said what I believe to be the truth. My colleagues that disagree have said what they think to be the truth. And, you know, you can read both of our statements and things and decide for yourself who you think is more accurate or more objective. And that's, I think, the way discourse and dialogue should be.
I have a belief that the mandates have actually encouraged people not to get the shots. If people had been left alone, I have been vaccinated, Dr. Risch, and I have had my booster shot. I'm a believer in vaccines. I'm not going to ask you unless you want to tell me if you have or not. But I did an analysis based upon, you know, my age and my consultation with my doctor, and that's where I came out. But I don't believe in mandates. Talk to me about that. I mean, do you think that this was a mistake for the government to continue to issue these mandates? The American people tend not to like mandates, is what my experience has been.
Well, we live in a society that fundamentally values our constitutional and natural rights, as everybody should. But that doesn't mean that those rights count for everything, that there are certainly indications when we have danger or crisis that the state has reasonable grounds to have to limit some of those rights in order to remove the crisis problem. And so this is basically takes a wise, you know, court of judges to decide how to do this process when these kinds of things happen. And in fact, the case that's relevant was a Supreme Court case in 1905 when there was a smallpox epidemic in the United States, in particular in Boston,
yep.
Boston area.
Massachusetts, Cambridge case, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was of a fellow who said, I don't believe the medical evidence of the vaccines, and therefore I don't want to take it. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court in the Jacobson case said that vaccines are appropriate as to be mandated as a legal method, but four criteria have to be met. One is that there has to be a compelling interest of the government, that it can't just be the government would like to do this, that there has to be some real reason. And the usual real reason is that there's a huge number of deaths that get prevented. So that's a compelling interest. The second criterion is that it can't be arbitrary or oppressive. meaning it has to target who has to have their rights limited for what benefit, and can't target just everybody, and including people who don't need it. Mm-hmm. A third one is that, what were the other two? There's two more, and they'll come to me. But anyway, so you can understand that these criteria are not just something that are static in that case, and therefore a court says, oh, well, the Supreme Court said vaccine mandates are okay, so the COVID mandates can be okay. It forms a form of what's called scrutiny, where the court has to evaluate these criteria and decide if they're all met, then the mandate is appropriate, and if they're not all met, then the mandate is not appropriate. And when you do this for the COVID vaccines, you see that none of the mandates are actually, the criteria are actually satisfied for the mandates, because the mandates have all included mandatory vaccination of people who've already had COVID, who are quite immune and yep. don't need this. And yet, so they're being forced to take the vaccines, you know, in spite of the fact that they don't need it, which is an arbitrary and oppressive violation of the constitutionality. The we know who now has a high risk of doing poorly with COVID. It's people, older people, elderly people, or people with obesity, diabetes, kidney disease, immunocompromised, maybe people who've been treated for cancer, and so on. We have a very defined class of people who are at risk for doing poorly. They're the ones who need to be vaccinated. The rest of the population does not have a benefit direction in the risk-benefit, you know, equation, and don't need to be vaccinated. But nevertheless, the government thinks that there's a compelling interest in vaccinating everybody. So these criteria are not met from what the Supreme Court said, and that's why the mandates will fail when they get to the Supreme Court now. It's just a question of how long it takes and who gets away with what in making these mandates.
I think that all of these mandates have recently lost at federal district courts. And again, it just philosophically, I think that the American people tend to recoil when they're being told to do something that in their own heart of hearts, people, you know, if they're not going to believe in it, and then you try to double down on them and tell them you have to take it. I think that's a tactical mistake. Dr. Reich, you got a bunch of phone calls. If you'll stay with me, we'll go right to phone
sure.
calls. I'm sure the listeners will have some questions as well, and I think you might be surprised how much support you have here on Nightside. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. Ladies' line is 617-931-1030. Again, feel free to join the conversation, ask a question, or make a comment. My guest, Dr. Harvey Reich, professor of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health and the Yale School of Medicine, has been at Yale for over 30 years, has been a scientist for more than 40 years. He has taken a position that some have criticized him for, but he has laid out his belief and his philosophy tonight for us. And I think it's a particularly important time because as we see this Omicron variant coming up on the radar screen, all of the early indications, and let's hope those early indications hold, are that this variant is a relatively mild variant, and frankly, it might be almost beneficial to people to contract this. I know that Dr. Fauci was asked that question the other day, and he recoiled at the question and said it was a dangerous question. I don't think most scientists, and I will ask Dr. Risch when we come back, if any questions are dangerous, particularly the question that was asked of Dr. Fauci. Back on Nightside, your phone call is coming right back.
It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's News Radio.
Before we get right to the calls with my guest, Dr. Harvey Risch of Yale, the Yale School of Medicine and the Yale School of Epidemiology, or public health, I should say. Professor Risch, I referred to this question that Dr. Fauci was asked the other day, and he had a strange reaction to it. I'd love to get your comment on his reaction to the question. It was a question about the fact that this, well, let me just play the bite. The question is, I think, is self-evident. Cut 13, please, Rob.
Yeah. I hope this is more, this proves more transmissible but less virulent than Delta. Would there be any public health benefit to furthering its spread by lifting travel restrictions, for example, so it can outcompete the Delta variant?
You're talking about something really dangerous. You're talking about let a lot of people get infected to see if, in fact, you could protect them. That's something that I think almost all infectious disease people with any knowledge about infectious disease would not say that's a good idea.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay. Your reaction to Dr. Fauci's reaction?
Dr. Fauci knows that there are academic research groups in the U.S. and elsewhere that are making vaccines that are work by infecting people, not by sticking a needle in your arm, but by people making a replicating vaccine product that infects people by breathing and transmitting from one person to another to create immunity. And so that is tantamount to a low mortality, low morbidity, you know, basically safe virus that gets spread by coughing or sneezing to make other people immune. And so he's in complete denial that this is a hot topic of research in the United States when he's asked, what about something that does this naturally? His only argument is that we don't quite know the safety of this virus yet. But once we do, and if it turns out to be as safe as it seems, then it will satisfy that role and will have cost zero for NIH to have funded.
Yeah, the premise of the question from the reporter was that if it was not as less dangerous than some of the other variants. I have a bunch of callers who would love to get to you, so we're going to start it off with one of my favorite callers, Steve in Cambridge. Steve, welcome. You're on with Dr. Harvey Risch of Yale. Go right ahead, Steve.
Good evening, Dan. Dr. Risch, I have two questions. Number one, it's my understanding that epidemiology deals mostly with observational studies, and that these studies are usually often very inconclusive. My question is there any rigorous science that shows whether masks are effective or not effective?
So those are two very different questions. The first question is that there has been a propaganda effort on the part of pharma companies and the doctors that they pay as consultants to claim that only randomized trials convey evidence. And this is basically a fraud. And the reason for that is that over the last 20 years, really over the last 12 years, scientists and doctors have started comparing the results of randomized trials to non-randomized trials studying the same outcomes, the same drugs, and so on. And in 2014, a large research group in England called the Cochrane Consortium published an analysis of what includes more than 10,000 studies of these comparisons. And that analysis showed that modern observational, in other words, non-randomized trials, give essentially the same answer as the randomized trials on average within 10%. That means that high-quality trials that are not randomized but understood the disease that they're studying and knew how to control for factors that needed to be controlled, do exactly the same thing as randomized trials. And we know that randomized trials can be subverted very easily. There's all sorts of ways to manipulate randomized trials so they show nothing. And so randomization is no guarantee. And in fact, randomization itself is useless unless you have hundreds of people with the outcomes that you're interested in. If it's death, you need to have hundreds of people who've died in the treatment group and the placebo group in order for the randomization to have worked. Otherwise, it's no better than a non-randomized study. So there's a lot of misinformation and misrepresentation about these two kinds of studies. Every study needs to be evaluated on its own merits, and that's the best way of looking at it as evidence. Now, as to masks, masking has two functions. It either protects the person who's wearing it from air that they have to breathe from other people, or it protects other people from the air that the person wearing the mask is breathing out. That's called source control. We, of course, are much more concerned with source control because we don't know who might infect us, and so we want, the question is, does the government have an interest in protecting people who can't protect themselves? And so there are only two randomized trials of masks used for source control, one in Denmark and one in Marine barracks in the U.S., and both of them show no benefit, no particular or statistically significant benefit of preventing people around the person who's wearing the mask from getting infected. Whether masks help the person who's wearing the mask, there's a lot of studies of that. It doesn't seem to be very protective. The bottom line, as my interpretation of masks is, if a person is symptomatic, like they're coughing and sneezing, and they're wearing a mask, and you happen to get into a 30-second conversation with them in the stairwell, passing them, the mask is likely to be helpful. If you're in a closed room that doesn't have much airflow, and you're spending an hour or two there, the mask is useless, because what they're breathing is going around the edges of the mask and diffusing into the rest of the room, and everybody's breathing it anyway. So masks might have a little bit of benefit in short term, where somebody is actively spreading. Short of that, I don't think that there's any evidence at all that masks are likely to have much of a benefit.
Dr. Risch, one more question. I've read that when autopsies are done that examine how accurate death certificates are, they find that a very large percentage of death certificates are wrong as to the cause of death. My question is, we are told that 700,000 people have died of COVID in this country. My guess is that it's a very inflated figure. Can you comment on that?
Honestly, I don't think we know. I think that there has been enough manipulation of the presentation of those data, so we don't know the truth. We know the CDC changed the criteria for making cause of death on the death certificates as to where COVID is listed, whether it's the primary cause on the front page at the bottom or somewhere else on the death certificate. We know that there have been instances of people dying with COVID and being claimed as dying from COVID. You know, the classical motorcycle accident death where the person had COVID, it was called a COVID death. So we don't really know. And honestly, it's not just that there's been malfeasance. It's a difficult question in the first place, because when you have multiple serious illnesses in a person and a person dies, it's not necessarily straightforward to attribute one as the cause of death, that they all pile on until the non-viability of that person, that threshold has been reached, and you can't really attribute which was the underlying cause that did this, only that the heart stopped and the brain stopped and so on. But that's not really the cause of death. That's just the most antecedent event that happened, but not really the underlying cause of death. So it's a big gray zone, and we don't really know the truth of this. And autopsies themselves aren't necessarily definitive, because you can find out that there's heart disease and kidney disease and prostate cancer and all sorts of things, but it doesn't necessarily tell you which is the cause of death, only that the person had all these other diseases. So it's still an expert judgment, but subjective kind of decision-making process, and now multiply that by 700,000, and you see what a problem it really is.
Steve, great questions.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Thanks, Steve. Let me get Rick and Rainham in here real quickly before the break. Rick, you are on with Dr. Javi Risch. Go right ahead, Rick.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for taking my call. Hello, Dr. Risch. In general, I've always kind of thought viruses get weaker in their mutations. That's a very general statement. This new mutation is so far so good, mild. Let's say that's the trajectory of this new variant. Is that going to be the trajectory of COVID in general? And if you think so, can the trajectory all of a sudden change again into a more dangerous virus?
Great question. Dr. Risch, good luck
so,
with that one.
You know, I'm not a virologist. I can only say that I think how smallpox ended in early in the century, and or maybe it was the Spanish flu that did that. I think that it's common for viruses to mutate that way in humans because they get more out of it. In other words, you don't want to kill your host because then you don't get spread to the next person. You want to leave your host with behaviors like coughing and sneezing that spread you because that's how you make more of yourself.
And I heard someone once mention Muller's ratchet.
That's correct. That's the name of what you described in words. And so that's why viruses that start off, you know, with relatively severe presentation of symptoms tend to lighten up over generations of mutations to be able to spread better. And that's what you see with the Delta wave. For example, while it didn't get any less aggressive, but it got a lot more infectious because that infectiousness made it spread better. Now, the fact that the Omicron variant is both less infectious and less aggressive. We know it's less infectious because a study done by Professor Jacques Fantini in France, this man is a genius. What he did is he took the images that you can get from computer analysis of the spike protein itself, in other words, the shape of the spike protein, where every part of it projects in which direction, like you had a model of it, and he's able to correlate that, different parts of that, with different ways that the virus works molecularly. And he created an index, he called an index of transmissibility, that measures how much the virus is likely to be infective. And he measured this for the original Wuhan original virus at about 2.2. Then the alpha and beta variants, the alpha I think was the British variant and beta, those were about 3.5 or something. Delta comes in at 10.67. And now he's done this for Omicron, and his analysis of Omicron is, I think, 3.2. So we're back to alpha and beta-like variants that are not as transmissible. Now you have to ask, well, why could this happen? How could a virus evolve backwards to be less infectious? And the answer to that is it's less infectious when you compare it to a person who's never had COVID and never been vaccinated. But the Omicron is able to evade the vaccine immunity. And so when you have a population that's, say, 70% vaccine immune, and to Omicron, it's a population of 0% immune. So it's, you know, it's like it's got free run. It can spread everywhere. So in them, it's much more able to spread. And so that's what it's done. It's removed it's evaded the vaccine immunity, and that's how it's able to spread. But fortunately, it did this by creating such a large spread of mutations that some of those mutations make it easy to invade and some make it hard to invade. And the net result in people is that it is apparently less aggressive.
Rick, I appreciate the call. I got to take a quick break. Great questions.
Thank you.
Great answers.
Thank you.
Thanks,
both.
Rick.
And have a great night. Thank you.
Good night. Dr. Rich, great answers. We're going to have a final segment coming up on the other side. I can't tell you much. I appreciate you taking these questions. We'll continue with Dr. Javi Rich right after this.
Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
We have full lines. We're tight on time. My guest, Dr. Javi Rich of Yale University with the School of Epidemiology at Yale Public Health, as well as medicine. Back to the calls we go. Let me go real quickly. Robert, you are next on Nightside. Robert in Blackstone, Massachusetts. Professor Risch, go right ahead, Robert.
Dan, being a Marine veteran, doctor was doing that survey with the Marine barracks. Marines are immune to a lot of things. I know I was in the Gulf War in 91, and I get every vaccine under the sun. They shot me up with everything, so I'm a non-vaxxer, and I don't believe in the BS.
Okay.
A quick comment. My wife's trying to get the PCR test for travel.
Yep.
Now, obviously, she's got to get a negative test to get on the plane. And then when she gets to Thailand, they got to quarantine her for 24 hours. So it's like nobody believes the test. I mean, so why even get the test?
I have a friend of mine who had to go back to Canada today, and he's an American citizen, dual citizenship, has to wait 14 days to come back to America, has to quarantine in Canada for 14 days. So
we've got all these arbitrary rules, you know, and they don't.
Yeah, but I mean, the test was negative. So
hold on, Robert. Professor Rich wanted to say something. Go ahead, Professor. I apologize.
Go ahead.
That's all right. We have a lot of arbitrary rules between different countries, and they don't make a lot of sense, you know, all that much. And we're just kind of stuck with having to deal with them the best we can.
Robert, thank you so much for your service. I appreciate you.
I hope people wake up, Dan, and you gave me Beanie Pot tickets years ago. I appreciate that. I hope people wake up to the fear. I mean, this is
That's why we're talking tonight. Well, you faced real
fear. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Robert. Talk to you soon. Let me go to Paul in Dorchester. Paul, we're really tight on time with Dr. Avi Risch. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, very quickly. I wish they would let this great doctor that you have on and this great program. Wish they would get him and Fauci on a stand and have a pay-per-view. And I know anybody in America would pay for it. We could pay off the national debt. I don't care if you charge me $500 to see it. I would pay the money. Everyone I know would pay it. I have never heard a more intelligent person on your show, Dan. You know, I've been listening forever.
Yep.
I'm sitting here saying to myself, I finally feel redeemed myself for all the things I say to people. The vaccine killed me, and it's killed my golf game. The pain I go through every night with on my right side that they can't explain, and they give me all these reasons what's wrong. But the bottom line is I never had anything like this before until after I took that stupid vaccination. I'll never take another one as long as I live. But all I want to do, I just want people to get the truth. And I'd like to see this doctor debate Fauci. This would be the greatest thing in the whole world. Because this man doesn't know how to answer a question truthfully.
Well
he doesn't answer a question at all. He doesn't ever quote any science. That's really the main problem.
Well, he basically said it was dangerous to ask the question. I thought that's what science was all about. You always had to. I'm not a scientist. I was a liberal.
Well, dangerous for him.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing about the science thing. Through the history of the world and scientific discovery, there's always been some people say it wasn't true and other people say it was. And sooner or later, all the facts came out and then people found the truth. This is what's the problem happening right now. Nobody will let the other side say anything. It's like, shut up, we don't want to hear you. And it's not fair.
That's it. When you can't argue scientifically, you argue by censoring. Censoring is the last holdout of people who cannot, you know, fight on the realm of ideas and data.
Well, why can't we get you against him one-on-one? If I was a millionaire, I'd be paying for that right now myself. I would give all my money to have you do that.
Well, Dr. Fauci is protected by a lot of the national media. He talks to the same people, talks to Jake Tapper and George Stephanopoulos, and they ask him softball questions. And, I just think that you need to have more points of view, and I'm so honored that Dr. Risch has been on this program before, Paul, so you missed him the first time, but you got him tonight. Look him up.
Yeah,
he has an incredible, incredible resume. This is a man whose experience, his resume is impeccable. I mean, we're talking about Yale School of Medicine, Yale School of Epidemiology, Yale School of Public Health. Doesn't get any better than that, Paul. Thanks, my friend.
Dan, I've been sitting here taking notes. First time ever on your show, I got a piece of paper in front, taking all these notes of everything you said.
We'll have a spot quiz tomorrow. Paul used to be a teacher in the Boston Public School
tomorrow.
System. All right.
Thank you,
all right,
thank you so much for being on. Paul. You made my whole night. I'm still watching the football game, though, too.
Keep the audio down. Thanks. All right. It's 8-7 in the game. Dr. Risch, thank you so much. You stayed longer than I ever expected you would. Thank you so much
for
being on my show. And I'd love to get you back at some point in the not too distant future. And if I could set up a head-to-head with Dr. Fauci, I would, but I don't think he'd take my phone calls. I'm not Jake Tapper or George Stephanopoulos. Dr. Risch, how can people find you and find your writings? Is there any, I know that some other people are going to want to follow you a little bit more closely. How can they do that?
At this point, there's no organized place, but a lot of it is at earlycovidcare.org. That's a website that has no financial, economic, anything in it. It's purely informational that I and some of my COVID-involved colleagues have put the references and papers and so on and details about how to understand the evidence as well as listings of doctors who treat COVID outpatients across the country, and both telemedicine groups and individual practitioners.
EarlyCOVIDCare.org. I will plug that on the other side of the news. Dr. Risch, we will talk again. I hope you have a great holiday season and get some rest, okay?
Thank
and the
you.
Students will be back at you in January. Thanks.
That's fine. Good to talk to you.
Great to talk with you. Dr. Harvey Risch of Yale. We will be back. If you're still on the line, I'd like to continue the conversation. So stay there. If you're not, give us a call.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.